One, stay tuned for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, October 1st, 2002. Wednesday, September 15th, 1982, Beirut, Lebanon. Chief of Staff General Rafael Eitan stated, quote, "All four Palestinian camps are surrounded and hermetically sealed." Then, on Saturday, September 18th, Ralph Schoenman and I gained entry into Sabra and Shatila camps
about 35 minutes after the first wave of slaughter.
After the last wave.
It was a charnel house.
We photographed piles of bodies, pieces of people, in small streets and in the houses and in shelters. Heads were smashed with axes. Eyes were cut out. Brains lay next to heads. Skin was stripped from the neck and face. Limbs were severed. Abdomens were laid open. It was butchery on a sustained scale. The worst of this was that the free-flowing blood and the pools of blood showed that the torture and mutilation had preceded death. Massacre, the linchpin of Zionist policy, is the focus of Taking Aim today,
which is occurring on the 20th anniversary of the massacres in Sabra and Shatila and the second anniversary of the uprising, the Intifada, the resistance of the Palestinian people. The invasion of Lebanon in the summer of 1982 had as its purpose the scattering through massacre and terror of the entire Palestinian population. Prior to the invasion of Lebanon in 1982, an invasion long prepared and sanctioned by the United States, the green light having been given to Sharon specifically by Alexander Haig, General Haig, Ariel Sharon and Bashir Gemayel, the leader of the Falange, the Kataib, the fascist political party and militia in Lebanon, declared on separate occasions that they would reduce the Palestinians in Lebanon from 500,000 to 50,000 people, an echo of the same themes that were uttered and orchestrated by all the major Zionist leaders from the last century through the period of occupation and expulsion in Palestine itself. But as the invasion of Lebanon unfolded, these plans began to surface in the pages of the Israeli and Western press. Haaretz reported on September 26, 1982, "The long-term objective aims at the expulsion of the entire Palestinian population of Lebanon, beginning with Beirut. The purpose is to create a panic to convince all the Palestinians of Lebanon that they are no longer safe in that country." The London Sunday Times reported on the same day, quote, "This carefully pre-planned military operation to purge the camps is called Moa Bartzel, or Iron Brain. The plan, familiar to Sharon and Begin, are part of Sharon's larger plan, discussed in detail by the Israeli cabinet on July 17th, unquote. Bashir Gemayel, emboldened as the Israeli blitzkrieg swept through Lebanon, stated, "The Palestinians are a people too many. We will not rest until every true Lebanese has killed at least one Palestinian," unquote.
Sabra and Shatila. The massacres which ensued bore a grim resemblance to the slaughter that had taken place in Deir Yassin, Douema, Kibya, and Kfar Qasim, as Palestine was depopulated from 1947 through the 1950s. The Western and Israeli reports made the murderous purpose of Israel's invasion unmistakable. Quote, by Sharon's admission, the Israelis planned 2 weeks ago to have the Lebanese forces enter the camp, wrote Time magazine. And later in the same article, it became clear that this had been prepared long before. Quote, top Israeli officers planned many months ago to enlist the Lebanese forces made up of the combined Christian militias headed by Bashir Gemayel to enter the Palestinian refugee camps once an Israeli encirclement of West Beirut had been completed. And the quote continues, on several occasions, Gemayel told Israeli officials he would raise the camps and flatten them into tennis courts. This fits in with Israeli thinking. The Christian militia forces that were known to have gone into the camps were trained by the Israelis.
Unquote.
The New York Times corroborated Time magazine's account. Quote, Sharon told the Knesset that the general staff and the commander-in-chief of the Phalangists met twice with Israel's ranking generals on September 15th. That's the day before, the day after, when on Tuesday, September 14th, Bashir Gemayel had been assassinated. And they discussed entering the camps, which they did the very next afternoon.
This was prepared for by statements by a prominent Lebanese officer and doctor in the unit which the Israelis were directing. He said, quote, soon there will not be a single Palestinian in Lebanon. They are a bacteria which must be exterminated. And the Israeli press was explicit in its detailing of Israeli plans. On September 15th, Haaretz quoted the chief of staff of the Israeli Armed Forces, General Rafael Eitan. He said all four Palestinian camps are now surrounded and hermetically sealed, unquote. And it's instructive to note that this is the same Rafael Eitan who said in the Knesset that when we have finished with the Palestinians in the West Bank, they will be like cockroaches scurrying around in a bottle and will crawl to us on all fours, unquote, a statement he made in the Knesset. 2 months before the massacre of Sabra and Shatila, perhaps the most remarkable account appeared in the Jerusalem Post. A long interview was published with Major Etienne Sacher, whose code name was Abu Arts. Major Sacher was the leader of the several thousand strong right-wing militia officered by the Israelis called the Guardians of the Cedars. The Jerusalem Post disclosed that Major Sacher, quote, is about to leave for the United States to put his plans and solutions before Americans. Quote, since 1975, he has propagated the Israeli solution, and Israel has supported him in every possible material way, unquote. Major Sacher's own remarks foreshadowed what would later shock the world at the Palestinian camps of Sabra and Shatila. Quote, and this is again the Jerusalem Post, it is the Palestinians with whom we will deal. 10 years ago, there were 84,000. Now there are between 600,000 and 700,000. In 6 years, there will be 2 million, and we won't let it come to that, unquote. He was asked by the Jerusalem Post, quote, well, what is your solution, unquote? And Major Sacher replied, very simple. We shall drive them to the borders of brotherly Syria. Any one of them who looks back, stops, or returns will be shot on the spot. We have the moral right, reinforced by well-organized public relations plans in Israel and the United States, and the political preparations, unquote. Are you, asked the Jerusalem Post, able to implement this? He does not blink an eye. Of course we can, and we shall, unquote. Major Sacher played a major role in the 1976 massacre of Palestinians in the Tal Azata refugee camp, an event that took place with Shimon Peres and, it's instructive to note, the Syrian defense minister present. After the massacres of Sabra and Shatila, Major Sacher returned to Jerusalem to hold a press conference in which he took responsibility for carrying out the massacre with the Israelis. Quote, no one has the right to criticize us. We carried out our orders, our duty, our sacred responsibility, unquote, Jerusalem Post. He left this press conference where he claimed credit, a share in the credit for mass murder, to attend a meeting with Prime Minister Menachem Begin. Major Saka surfaced again, now based in the Israeli command headquarters in the Saraya complex in Sidon, near the Palestinian camp of Ein El Helway. His militia distributed leaflets through Sidon, which read, quote, "Germs live only in rot. Let us prevent rot from infiltrating society. Let us continue the work of destruction of the last bastions of the Palestinians and smash whatever life is left in this poisonous snake," unquote. This leaflet, this document, this declaration was issued from the headquarters officered by the Israelis, controlled by the Israeli military. Major Saker had worked closely with the notorious intelligence chief of Bashir Gemayel's militia, Eli Hobeika. Hobeika was known at that time as the CIA's man in Beirut. And I should mention at this point that it was Hobeika who, after 20 years, came forward to state that he was ready to disclose the role of the Israelis and of Sharon in particular in organizing the massacres of Sabra and Shatila, and was ready to go to Belgium to give testimony. He was assassinated the next day in Beirut. Jonathan Randall of the Washington Post cited Hobeika's declarations in Beirut in 1982, ascribing these to one of the killers, and they echo the declarations of Major Saker in Jerusalem, quote, "Shoot them against the pink and blue walls. Slaughter them in the half-light of the evening. The only way you will find out how many Palestinians we killed is if they ever build a subway under Beirut. A good massacre or two will drive the Palestinians out of Beirut and Lebanon once and for all," unquote. The Israeli Army Command had enlisted the leading Lebanese officers, when one of them revealed, quote, "During Thursday, General Drori, the Israeli general, took me to the airport where the Israelis were assembling our militia. If your men don't carry it out, I know others who will," unquote. He was referring to Saker. The Guardians of the Cedars, who Gemayel incorporated into the Lebanese forces in 1980, held as an article of faith, and I'm still quoting, "Palestinian infants must be killed, since they eventually grow up to be terrorists," unquote.
The brutality of the invasion and the occupation of Lebanon and the massacres of Sabra and Shatila, the chilling horror of them, removed the mask from the cruel face of Zionism, which again we saw with the attacks, the occupation, and the brutalizing of the Palestinian people in Jenin, and which goes on to this day in the West Bank and Gaza. Now, the television and the newspaper coverage of the war in Lebanon in 82 produced a worldwide outcry, which forced Israel to dissimulate, and they appointed an official commission of inquiry, the Kahan Commission. The so-called investigation concluded that the Israelis were merely negligent in underestimating, quote, Arab bloodlust, but had no direct role in the massacre of Sabra and Shatila. But the German weekly Der Spiegel carried an interview on February 14, 1983, with one of the killer militia. And he recounted not only his role in this slaughter, but described direct Israeli participation. The article, "Each of You is an Avenger," is a first-person account. Ralph?
It could have come from the Nuremberg trials. He writes, "We met in the Shahur Wadi in the Valley of the Nightingales, southeast of Beirut. It was Wednesday, the 15th of September. We were approximately 300 men from East Beirut, South Lebanon, and the Akkar Mountains in the north. I belonged to the Taiga militia of former President Kamil Shamoun. The Falange officers summoned us and brought us to the meeting place. They told us we were being prepared for our special action. You are the agents of the good, the officers told us repeatedly. Each of you is an avenger. Then over a dozen Israeli officers in green uniforms, their rank having been removed from uniforms, came along. They were playing cards, and they spoke Arabic well, except that, like all Jews, they pronounced the hard H as Cha. They were speaking to us of the Palestinian camps of Sabra and Shatila, and they made clear to us what we were to do. We were looking forward to it. We had to swear an oath not to divulge anything about our action. At 10 p.m., we climbed into American Army trucks that the Israelis turned over to us. We parked the vehicles near the airport tower. There, immediately next to the Israeli positions, other trucks were already parked, brought there by the Israelis. Some Israelis were wearing Falange uniforms and were with our party. Quote, "The Israeli friends who accompany you, our officers told us," unquote, "will make your work easier. They directed us not to make use of our firearms if possible. Everything must proceed noiselessly. We saw other comrades. They had to do their work with bayonets and knives. Bloody corpses were lying in the alleys. The half-asleep women and children who cried out for help put our plan in danger, alarming the entire camp. Now I saw once again the Israelis who had been in our secret meetings. They signaled us to move back to the areas of the camp entrance. Now the Israelis opened up with all their guns in the camps. The Israelis assisted us with floodlights. There were shocking scenes that showed what Palestinians are good for. A few of them, including women, had taken shelter in a small alley behind donkeys. Unfortunately, we had to shoot down those poor animals to finish off the Palestinians behind them. It got to me when the animals cried out in pain. It was gruesome. A comrade entered a house full of women and children. The Palestinians screamed. They threw their gas stoves on the ground. We sent the hard rabble to hell. At about 4 in the morning, my squad went back to the truck. When there was morning light, we went back into the camp. We went past bodies. We stumbled over bodies. We shot and stabbed all eyewitnesses. The killing of others was easy once you have done it. Now came the Israeli army bulldozers. Plow everything under the ground, we were told. Don't let any witnesses stay alive. But despite our efforts, the area was teeming with people. They ran about. They caused awful confusion. The order from the Israelis to plow them under became too much for us to accomplish. It became clear that our pretty plan had failed because thousands had escaped us. Far too many Palestinians are still alive. Everywhere now people talk about a massacre and they feel sorry for Palestinians. Who appreciates the hardships that we took upon ourselves? Just think, I fought for 24 hours in Shatila without food or drink, unquote. The death toll in Sabra and Shatila was over 3,000 people. Many of the mass graves were never opened.
Our program today on taking aim is Massacre, the Linchpin of Zionist Policy. You can read more about the hidden history of Zionism in the book by that name by Ralph Schoenman, which you can get from us or at Revolution Books or through Amazon.com. And we'll tell you a little later how you can order books and tapes and CDs from us. Massacre, the Linchpin of Zionist Policy. Ariel Sharon, now Prime Minister of the Zionist State, was the head of the defense, head of the Israeli Defense Forces at the time of the massacre of Sabra and Shatila, absolved by the Kahan Commission for Direct Responsibility. Yet Massacre and Ariel Sharon have been like hand in the glove from the beginning of his military policy. In fact, an important interview with Ariel Sharon that appeared in the Jerusalem Post and is on the Internet, September 26, 2002, he states, quote, "We have no limit on our military actions. We choose the moves we think are the most effective. Massacre, the linchpin of Zionist policy."
Maya, on August 20th of 2002, the Toronto Globe Intelligencer published a very important article called Ariel Sharon's Secret Plan to Expel the Palestinians from Israel. And the article states, Israel's hardline Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has ordered the Defense Forces of Israel to drive out hundreds of thousands of Palestinians on the West Bank over the border into Jordan. Jordanian intelligence chiefs say the operation will commence the day of the forthcoming United States attack against Iraq. Sharon believes that this will give him, quote, the just excuse, unquote, to remove the Palestinians, who would pose a, quote, totally unacceptable threat to the safety of Israelis, unquote. Details of this plan have been leaked by Jordanian intelligence to Western intelligence and services, including the United Kingdom's MI6. The revelation has deepened the split within the cabinet of Tony Blair about Britain's continued support. And the article goes in particularity about how Sharon has all the military preparations in place for the entire expulsion through massacre of the population of the West Bank and Gaza, to be followed by a similar operation within the the 67 borders of Israel.
And we will return to the current situation. This not only marks the 20th anniversary of the massacre of Sabra and Shatila, September 15th through September 18th, 1982, but September 28th marked the second anniversary of the second intifada that has been taking place in the West Bank and Gaza, the struggle of the Palestinians for self-determination. But to return to 1982, in an interview that was conducted with Ralph Schoenman and myself at the United Nations, that interview so struck the Jordanian ambassador that he submitted it to the General Assembly and the Security Council. In his letter dated 7 December 1982, the permanent representative of Jordan at the time stated, and his name was Hazem Nusseiba, he stated, "I have the honor to enclose herewith the verbatim record of an interview with Mr. Ralph Schoenman and Miss Maya Schoen, two correspondents who witnessed the barbaric slaughter of the Palestinian refugees in the Sabra and Shatila camps, all of whom were unarmed elderly men, women, children, and infants. The eyewitness interview proves two ghastly facts." And he goes on to say, quote, "that the entire savage operation was planned, commanded, and executed by the overall command of the Israeli Regular Armed Forces. Two, that most of the slaughter and mutilation had been carried out with axes, knives, and other weapons of butchering on a mass scale. The worst of this, according to Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman, was that the free-flowing blood, as I've said before, and the pools of blood showed that torture and mutilation of thousands of victims had preceded death." And he goes on to say, "there are no words that can even remotely describe the incredible and barbaric massacres."
And he says, "I request, Your Excellency, that the enclosed be circulated as an official document of the General Assembly and of the Security Council under Agenda Item 34, signed Hazem Nusseibeh, Ambassador of the Permanent Representative of Jordan."
What are the details of the massacre? It began on Wednesday night. And it began after the Israeli armed forces had sealed off the camps, as Rafael Haytan had stated to the Haaretz. They had hermetically sealed the camps. No one could enter or leave. They were in complete control of the area. The killer units which carried out the slaughter did so in full coordination with Israeli armed forces. And in fact, there had been bombardment which kept people from entering the camps. It's no assumption. By Thursday, despite the Israeli fire that was directed against any escaping people, some 1,500 refugees had managed to reach Gaza Hospital in the north of Sabra camp. They were panicked. They were hysterical, and they filled the basement and corridors of the hospital. They told the Norwegian, Finnish, and German doctors and the nurses about the slaughter that was taking place in the camps and that Israeli forces were firing on the camp, having sealed it off.
They asked the International Committee of the Red Cross to enter the camps, and they asked Israelis to halt the slaughter.
This is the nurses and the doctors who went to the ICRC.
And the International Committee of the Red Cross stated that the Israeli shelling was too intense. They could not reach the camps, nor would the Israeli forces permit them to enter. The people in Sabra met in houses and shelters during the shelling. They took a community decision to appeal to the Israeli command post for an end to the killing. Four men were sent as a delegation to the Israeli command post carrying a white flag. They informed the Israeli commanders that the camps could offer no resistance. They were in a state of surrender. There were no arms in Sabra Shatila, the arms having been taken turned over to a multinational force before their departure. The four-man delegation did not survive their mission. All four were shot dead by the Israelis at 5 p.m. Thursday afternoon. Their bodies were found at the Israeli army checkpoint adjacent to the Israeli Kuwaiti embassy. The names of the four men were Abu Suaid, age 62, Abu Hamad Ismail, age 55, Tawfiq Abu Hasma, age 64, Abu Ahmed Saeed, age 65. We interviewed with tape recorders survivors the massacres in Sabra. They described to us the decision to send a delegation, its mission, and its fate. Throughout this period of Thursday, throughout Friday and Saturday morning, the Israeli forces continued to direct fire at people throughout the camps. The Israeli army supplied the militia with uniforms, arms, even shoelaces. At the checkpoints of the Kataib and Hadadi militia, there was always an Israeli officer in charge. Indeed, the uniforms were the same, except that the Hadadi forces had Free Lebanon stitched on their uniforms, and the Kataib had a phalange insignia.
In the 4 days after the massacres that took place in Sabra and Shatila, Ralph and I interviewed over 70 people. And then we went back that winter and interviewed even more, tracking down the survivors, whether they were in southern Lebanon, had been dispersed to southern Lebanon, or still remained in Beirut. People from different parts of the camp who didn't know each other gave very similar accounts of what took place. Person after person described to us the integral nature of the military operation between the Israeli forces and the militia. For instance, Hussein O was arrested by the Israeli forces on Thursday night as he tried to distribute bread during the shelling because people weren't able to go out to go shopping. He was taken through checkpoints manned jointly by Israeli forces and Hadad militia. He saw people march to these checkpoints, separated out and shot by the militia in the immediate presence of Israeli soldiers who were in command. On Friday morning, several witnesses described how Israeli armed forces entered Shatila and the southern part of Sabra. Now remember, Sabra and Shatila are integral parts of Beirut. They are suburbs of Beirut. They entered from the road which connects the Kuwaiti embassy to Aka Hospital, which is a main thoroughfare. One of the survivors saw the killing of Safiya Khalid Hamoud, age 38, and her two children, Hassan, age 2, and Mohammed, age 8.
The Israeli forces entered the main road of Sabra and Shatila and South Sabra. They fanned out into the small streets. They met no resistance in the camps. They then formed a phalanx inside the camps, 100 yards from the house of Safi Khalid Hamoud. The militia units then came through the Israeli lines, which reformed behind them, protecting their rear flank. The militia, with Israeli officers directing them, began to slaughter people systematically. All Israeli forces were present. They had uniforms identical to those of the Israeli troops, except that Free Lebanon was stitched on them. They painted the Kataib insignia on houses. They killed the people with axes and knives.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen on Tuesday, October 1st. Our program today is Massacre, the Linchpin of Zionist Policy. And the descriptions that we're giving you today of the massacre in Sabra and Shatila are the first time we have done so on the air, and maybe the first time you've had such explicit person personal accounts broadcast to you, thanks to WBAI. Ralph and I will be in the New York area on October 25th, 26th, and 27th, speaking at three places, for the Marxist School on Friday. At St. Mary's Church in Harlem, at St. Mark's on Saturday, and at Oberia Dempsey, with co-sponsored by Africa Kaleidoscope, on Sunday. And we'll be giving you the details over the next coming week. But to reach us, to find out more about these events, and to find out more how to get tapes, CDs, and the books, you can contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net.
The meeting, by the way, Maya, at St. Mark's Church, which takes place on Saturday, the 26th.
No, that's on
Saturday the 26th, yes, yes. Friday at St. Mary's,
right,
for the Marxist School in Harlem. Saturday the 26th, Frank Morales, who has done such a tremendous work in exposing the repression, martial law, and the posse comitatus changes in the ability of the army to repress, will occur at St. Mark's Church. And then the 27th will be with a Lambe Brass at Byra Dempsey at 5 o'clock Sunday, the 27th, in Harlem.
Now, Taking Aim at PacBell, that's PacBell.net. You are listening to Taking Aim on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the internet at www.wbai.org. I'd like to take this moment to thank our engineers, Matthew Finch, the public affairs director at WBAI, who's in New York, and Erica Bridgman here at KPFA in Berkeley, and also Brad Wiedmeyer, who is our associate and helps us plan these programs. So back now to Massacre, the Linchpin of Zionist Policy, and the Massacre of Sabra and Shatila, August 15th through 18th, 1982. So Saturday morning, September 1982. In the early morning, about 5 a.m., the slaughter began again as the Israeli troops ringed the camp. They were all surrounding it and
both
going
camps,
through
both camps. Sabra and Shatila.
Sabra and Shatila are contiguous. It's
they were also surrounding Burjel Barazny, an adjacent camp, and the killing proceeded throughout.
The killing took place until 10:30 a.m., when bulldozers were brought into the camps to pile up bodies and pour rubble over them. One Lebanese man was saved by the screaming child he was holding. For some reason, he was left unscathed, while all around him soldiers cleaved people with axes and knives. Another witness, Sadi, age 60, hid while the militia hacked people with axes. And one boy hid in his mother's blood and was left for dead, but had his finger chopped off while he was lying there. We tried on Saturday morning to gain entry, but were turned back at Israeli checkpoints. We then walked through Fakhani, which is a district of Beirut, and behind the buildings until we gained entry into Sabra and Shatila. As I said before, it was a charnel house, and we spent over 4 days interviewing people and photographing them, and some of those slides became part of the War in Lebanon and Inside View, which we produced, and portions of which we will show at Oberia Dempsey.
I should mention that this slide presentation of the massacres at Sabra and Shatila and the massacres that occurred throughout Lebanon in the south at Rosh Hadia and Ain El Helwe not only was shown across the United States but also in Israel, and the and Yasser Arafat and the PLO executive used this slideshow as evidence of what had occurred and presented it to the Italian Foreign Ministry and to other governmental bodies.
At approximately 1 p.m. on Saturday, after we had gone through the camps to Aka Hospital, the Aka Hospital was on fire, and there were nurses and doctors who were trying to take out some of the material, some of the medical equipment and also the bandages and so forth that they could use throughout Beirut. But while we were there, people started screaming because there were loudspeakers, and we looked to see, and there were Israeli tanks, half tracks, and combat units in black jackets that were descending on the camp and enveloping the hospital. They were using loudspeakers as well to broadcast, and what the loudspeakers were saying in Arabic was that any who do not surrender would be killed.
There is no call to any Khalil units to desist this claim falsely by the Israeli government. I should mention that when we had been in the camp of Rashidiyya at the time that the curfew was declared, we made our way clandestinely to Beirut. We encountered some of the Norwegian and Dutch nurses and doctors who had been working at the hospitals, who told us that terrible things were happening in the camps. We tried to get in there. We couldn't gain access. We literally walked through the rubble, hiding in shells of buildings, Israeli units would pass, and we walked into Sabra having no idea of exactly what we would find. We were shocked and stunned into total incomprehension by the vast array of slaughtered and mutilated bodies. We're crying as we walked. We were taking pictures. We were hiding from the militia units still in the camps. We were determined to make a record of this. We didn't know if any of it would ever surface. We took our pictures and our slides, and then came back for 4 days interviewing the survivors. The horror was corroborated by people from every corner of the camp.
The Norwegian, the Finnish, and the other foreign doctors and nurses at Aqqa and Gaza hospitals, many of whom were staying at the Mayflower Hotel where we too were staying in Beirut, saw patients shot dead in their beds. When the doctors and the nurses were marched out of Gaza Hospital, which is the second hospital, there was Gaza in one camp and Aqqa in the other, when they were marched out of Gaza Hospital on Saturday morning, they were marched down the main street of Sabra to Shatila, and they saw bodies everywhere. About 1,000 people were lined up on the street, they reported. As the doctors and nurses marched, people were taken in groups to the side streets, which are basically alleyways, and there were machine gun fire was heard. And I can attest, having taken pictures of the groups of people who were machine gunned against walls, that what they are saying is true.
Well,
the Egyptian hospital accountant, for instance, was shot dead. In Aqqa Hospital, Dr. Ali Osman, a Palestinian, was taken away by the Israelis, and he was shot dead. And an Israeli military unit entered Aqqa Hospital, lined up the military personnel. One Israeli officer gave a piece of paper with his name on it to the Palestinian nurse, Antazar Ismail, and told her to show this paper to the soldiers who were due to come shortly. When the Israeli soldiers left, the militia unit followed them into Aqqa Hospital. Antizar Ismail showed them the piece of paper. They laughed. Took her into the basement of the building behind the hospital. She was raped and mutilated. The disfiguring was so terrible that her aunt could only identify the body from the rings on her finger. Here is an Israeli unit entering a hospital, sending in the militia unit, which then butchers the people. It is a pattern.
Where else in the world, in what occupied country, will you exonerate the occupying army when indigenous militia under its direct control are used to carry out murderous operations? People everywhere we have gone in and out of Lebanon have understood this. When we first entered the camps, without any idea of what we were encountering, we saw the charnel house, we saw the butchery. In the small streets, in the houses, in the shelters, hundreds of people in one concentrated area, all rest were mutilated, heads smashed with axes, eyes cut out, brains lying next to their heads, skin stripped from neck and face, limbs severed, abdomens laid open, butchery on a sustained scale, the free-flowing blood and the pools of blood demonstrating that the torture and mutilation had preceded death. This was a design This was a slaughter. This was a policy. This was a pre-planned operation. This was the modality of treatment of the Palestinian people from one end of Lebanon to the other.
Massacre, the linchpin of Zionist policy. And as I mentioned before, in the Jerusalem Post, Ariel Sharon did an interview, No Military Solution to the War with Palestinians. That's the title of the September 26th interview. But in fact, if you read it closely, you see that military policy, war, massacre, this is on the ground, the policies of Ariel Sharon, and he is always giving it his imprimatur. That's what he says is his method. As he says specifically, quote, "We have no limit on our military actions. We choose the moves we think are most effective," end quote. And in another place he says of today, quote, "No constraints are placed on the army."
Maya, in 1940, Joseph Weitz, the director of the Jewish Agency's Colonization Department responsible for the organization of settlements in Palestine, wrote, quote, "Between ourselves, let it be clear, there is no room for both peoples in this country. We shall not achieve our goal if the Palestinians are allowed to remain. There will be no other way. We shall transfer them to neighboring countries, all of them. Not one village, not one tribe, not one clan shall be left," unquote. Zionist policy, Zionist practice, the linchpin of the occupation and depopulation of Palestine, the driving out of 860,000 people out of a population of slightly more than 900,000 people, and the massacres that we witnessed, that we described in Sabra and Shatila, have an eerie verisimilitude to precisely what occurred throughout Palestine. Here is the account at Duema of the labor publication Davar, the newspaper of the Histadrut, the General Federation of Workers of Israel, quote, Duema, in 1948. "They killed between 80 to 100 Palestinian men, women, and children. To kill the women, to kill the children, the soldiers fractured their heads with sticks. There was not one home without corpses. The men and women of the villages were pushed into houses without food or water. Then the other soldiers came to dynamite them. One commander ordered soldiers to bring women into the building he was about to blow up. Other soldiers prided themselves on raping Palestinian women before shooting them to death. Another Palestinian woman with her newborn baby was made to clean the place for a couple of days, and then they shot her and the baby. Educated, well-mannered commanders, who were considered good guys, became base murderers, and this not in the storm of battle, but as a method of expulsion and extermination. The fewer the Palestinians who remain, we were told, the better," unquote. The slaughter at Duema, as described in Davar, 1948.
Siege, starvation, massacre. Massacre, the linchpin of Zionist policy. September 20th, 2002. A huge pail of smoke rose from the compound in Ramallah, where Yasser Arafat, the Palestinian president and leader, had his headquarters. There was a series of explosions that rocked the area. This is how the BBC reports on September 20th, 2002, where the Israeli army blew up and bulldozed more than 10 structures in the compound, the Mukada, which is already battered by previous incursions, and Reuters then reported siege, starvation, and military incursions. As Ariel Sharon, Prime Minister of England, reports in the Prime Minister of the Zionist Day of Israel reports in the Jerusalem Post, again, this interview of
you
September.
You could say he's the de facto Prime Minister of Great Britain with Tony Thatcher in office. There's the 400,000 demonstrators that took the streets of London in the largest demonstration of this generation made very clear in Trafalgar Square. Tony Thatcher is a clone of Ariel Sharon and of Mortimer Snerd, the President of the United States.
As Ariel Sharon said, quote, "We took down the buildings in the compound and left him," meaning left Yasser Arafat, "in a little hovel. We took them down until we got to the point where any further action was liable to cause the structure he is in to fall on top of him." Now, why he didn't let it fall on top of him is only because President George W. Bush was trying to get a resolution before the UN, and the UN was about to have a resolution against Palestine, because if you look at what happened throughout
Beirut...
Against
the occupation of Palestine.
Against the occupation. If you look at what took place in Beirut in 1982, there was a day-by-day implosions, attacks with incredible bombs that sucked the air out of buildings as they went building by building hunting for Yasser Arafat.
Maya, the International Herald Tribune on the 25th of September published an article by Henry Siegman called "Sharon's Real Purpose is to Create Foreigners." It's an extraordinary article because Henry Siegman is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and is one of the people who helps design policy for the United States government and its rulers. And in this article, he discloses that the intention of Sharon, as the Toronto Globe Intelligencer has made clear in its articles, as the Jerusalem Post in its own extraordinary interview with Sharon makes clear, the intention is to remove the Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza, even as they were driven out in a paradigm of ethnic cleansing in the period prior to the formation of the Zionist state. Massacre, the linchpin. And the Henry Siegman article in the International Herald Tribune states that the Sharon policy, through brutal curfews, through closings, remains unchanged. It is a preparation for the expulsion of the Palestinians and for the remnant that may remain. Siegman writes that Sharon's purpose is to recreate the conditions of the Bantustans of South Africa and to treat them as foreigners, but under direct Israeli military control. These are the realities. This is the dynamic. And if we needed any confirmation, it was provided on Sunday night by 60 Minutes in its special program, in which Israeli Defense Force spokesman presented, quote, documents, unquote, to show that the Palestinians are sleeper cell terrorists for Saddam Hussein, that they are operating under the direction of both Iraq and Iran, and that they are preparing for biological attacks upon the Israelis. And in this delineated description of the Israeli state propaganda, the 60 Minutes presented as fact documents were supposedly taken from the headquarters of Yasser Arafat to establish that, in fact, it is Saddam Hussein and the Iranian regime who direct the Palestinian resistance and whose operatives are just waiting in Palestine to unleash biological weapons. This, in all seriousness, presented by 60 Minutes as the scenario and clearly preparing us for the Israeli and the American plan of the following: under the cover of the wider war, under the cover of the attack in Iraq, under the pretext that the staged events, which undoubtedly the Mossad will put into place in Israel and in Palestine, attributed to Palestinians under the supposed direction of Saddam Hussein, will prepare for the Israeli attack on Iraq and the expulsion of the Palestinian people from the West Bank and Gaza. Let it be very clearly said, the massacres of Sabra and Shatila were the model, were the method, were the example, were the embodiment of Sharon, of Zionist policy, of the genocidal nature of the colonial project in Palestine, of the apartheid character of the Zionist state, of the Israeli organizational effort to remove the Palestinians from history, to destroy them as an organized people, as a presence. A people too many is how they were described. A people too many is how they are being treated.
In fact, Ralph, the story that 60 Minutes put forward, people heard here first on Taking Aim last week when I reported the disinformation campaign of DEPCA and the fact that the Israeli Shin Bet, the security service in Israel, was coming to the United States to speak to the CIA about the three Palestinians from Ramallah who had trained in Iraq, supposedly, and were part of Abu al-Abbas, the Arab Liberation Front, one of the Palestinian resistance groups. And what the DEPCA is now trying to do is tie these three Palestinians, the so-called sleeper cells, trained in Iraq, to Colonel Tufik Tarawi, the chief of the West Bank General Intelligence and one of Chairman Arafat's most trusted aides. And the reason they are tying him is because Tarawi and Abu al-Abbas come from the same village of Tira, north of Ramallah, and went to school together. So, folks, you're going to be seeing a lot of disinformation over and again, just as there's the disinformation about Iraq and the weapons of mass destruction. There's going to be a lot of disinformation coming out in order to tie the Palestinians to an invasion of Iraq.
What we're going to see is the counterpart of 9/11, the staged events, the pretext for a design that has long been in preparation. On August 27th, 2002, it was exposed that Gamla, a group directed and organized by Israeli military officers, had published a plan, which was then released on a website in a 9,000-word manifesto entitled The Logics of Transfer, and, quote, the mass ethnic cleansing of every Palestinian, the only solution to the so-called Palestinian-Israeli conflict, is well in preparation. Gamla's manifesto is explicit in declaring Israel, quote, must make clear to the world community that this decision cannot be made at a later time. We will be forced to start the forced expulsion of the Arabs into Jordan and the Sinai. And the expulsion plan is detailed. Quote, the relocation of 1,000 people will be completed within a 48-hour period similar to the border crossing operations. Israel will direct this relocated community out. The abandoned settlement will be completely demolished and leveled with the ground. What they call a settlement is where the Palestinians live. Any attempts on the part of the Palestinians to carry out sabotage or any resistance will be suppressed in the most brutal way. We will implement the proposal of Harvard Professor Alan Dershowitz, in which a warning will be first presented by the army, and the attack will follow immediately. We will level Arab villages. We will level their settlements. They will be chosen by computer from our published list. We will make clear that the Palestinians are responsible for their own fate, that they are terrorists, that they will not be tolerated, that they will be removed. The only precedent for this chilling and methodical approach to ethnic cleansing was the industrialized elimination of the Jews planned and carried out by Nazi Germany.
You are listening to Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen on WBAI 99.5 FM. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net or write to us at Veritas Press, Veritas Press, Post Office Box 6345, Vallejo, Vallejo, California 94591. Now, Ralph and I will be in New York on October 25th, 26th and 27th. On the Friday, the 25th, we will be speaking at an event of the Marxist School at
at St. Mary's Church in Harlem.
And on Saturday, we will be speaking at
St. Mark's Church in the Lower East Village.
And on Sunday at 5 o'clock, co-sponsor Taking Aim and Africa Kaleidoscope, we will be speaking at Oberia Dempsey. That's 125 West 125th.
And these events coincide with the mass demonstrations that are being prepared throughout the United States for that weekend. They coincide with mass demonstrations that are being organized in many countries across the world. This is part of the movement of Fight Back. The descriptions that we give, the accounts that we provide of the intent to expel the Palestinian people, of the new massacres yet in preparation, are not intended to demoralize people. They are not intended to intimidate anyone. They are intended to alert people to the realities of imperial policy, and they are intended to prepare us for the resistance that will pervade the entire Middle East and beyond, the fight back of the masses of the population. We are the many. These conspirators of slaughter are the few, and the day of reckoning with this rotten system of plunder, pillage, and mass murder is going to yet occur within our lifetimes.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We'll be with you next week.